Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. RSG Renegade Radio, the People's Podcast. We back in full effect, and we are feeling it. Before we get into the season, allow me to say you could have been anywhere in the world, but you are here with us, and we appreciate your patronage. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer, and 1/3 of the illustrious Free Man Booth. Before we get into what we get into, how we do what we do, let me bring in my comrades. The other 2/3 of the illustrious Free Man Booth. On my right, I got my man, T. Will. I'll ask people. He will. You just don't let it. You don't let the beat ride.
I want to let the beat ride. You know, I want to. You know, like Jay-Z said, I want to let it breathe a little bit. I was feeling good with the beat. But it's been good, man. I had a chance to spend some time with Phil. You know, we had a chance to see LeBron live and in color. We'll talk a little bit about that. I just feel real good about what we try to do in RSG, man, and uplifted. And this show for me is from our Uncle Oscar. We call him the Big O. He loves sports. He got excited about us when we were playing. He's a Knicks fan to the 10th power. And we laid him to rest. And just feel like his spirit is here. And we're looking to have a good show tonight.
Absolutely. As always, we're going to kick it live. We're going to give you nothing but unadulterated funk for the next 90 minutes or so. On my left, I got my man 100 grand, COT Sports PAC. What's happening, Captain?
Hey, man, glad to be on the show with you fellas. In the words of Jay-Z and Memphis Bleek on that first album, it was all good just a week ago with my Cleveland Cavs,
yes,
man. It was all good just a week ago with my Cleveland Cavs.
Yeah, we are going to get into that and so much more tonight. We have a special interview to celebrate our 5th anniversary. We've been doing this for 5 years. And, you know, lately I've put some people up on the podcast, you know, and they're like, wow, you know, they subscribe. And they're like, you guys got 300 plus episodes of your podcast. You know, like, yeah, we've been doing this for a while, man. When you really think about it, we've been putting it down for the people for a minute. We're going to continue to do so, as we always do. We have a special interview tonight. D. Wills, again, like I said in the intro, it's just night without the anger management issue, right? Like that little mean streak. He took the class. He passed the 12-step program, so he's all good. He can control his anger. You know, he's got like a little countdown. He blows out the candle. Little things that he do to keep himself under control when things get a little hectic around here. But he pulled some strings and got some things done. We got an edition, classic edition, funky editorial on deck for you. We're gonna talk about LeBron James signing a $1 billion contract tonight. And what does that mean? Like what does that mean? Like $1 billion. Like I'm doing the Dr. Peebles Austin Powers Kink thing right now. You can't see it on radio. But I am doing that because $1 billion is a ridiculous amount of money, and he is the first athlete to sign a $1 billion endorsement deal. Just what does that mean? How does that change the game? That was one of the goals he set for himself as a youngin' coming up, and he's finally achieved that. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see about that. And we're going to have to get the guys' opinions on that. We're going to hit you off with a 5 on the black-hand side where we're going to get into the NBA playoffs. Lots going on. As my man PhD said, it was all good just a week ago. Then we're gonna hit you with a new segment that we have here on the Real Sports Guys. It's called I Don't Have Facts to Back This Up, inspired by my man Herman Cain. And that's what the Real Sports Guys is just gonna give you our just straight up opinion. Like we don't even have to back it up with nothing. We're just gonna say what we feel. So you're gonna get some real. We're gonna try to predict the future and really throw some stuff at you in that particular segment. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. But with no further ado, I'm going to let D. Will set the table for this special situation he put together for us. So go ahead, D. Will, take it away.
Well, you know, we've been doing it for 5 years, and one of the interviews I wanted to do this year was with Brett Bielema because, you know, as – I'll tell the story how it happened during the interview, but it was good he came on the show. And in some ways, he was our biggest kind of name to come on, and always been that kind of guy that he wasn't going to be the kind of guy that, you know, he only had to talk to ESPN. And so it just felt good. Reached out to him, quickly got back, and we were able to set up a interview with him. And it was just good to kind of – one of the things I love about Brett is that he's unfiltered in a way that he's not afraid to share his opinion. A lot of times you get coach speak or player speak, but, you know, I think part of the reason why I think players gravitate to him is that he's going to tell you what he thinks. And so you'll get a chance to hear that. So we're going to share a little bit of this interview. We got this exclusive. It's just a sample, kind of a foreshadowing of what is going to come on RSG and where we're going, that we're back and better than ever. And in our next 5 years, we're going to take it to another level. So I'm going to drop this real quick and let you hear my man, Brett. You're listening to the Real Sports Guys. This is Devon Wilson here. We've got a special interview. As many of you know, this is our 5th year anniversary. And one of the interviews I really want to do in this 5th year was with the person who actually was one of the first guests to come on our show early on, Brett Bielema, coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. When he was at Wisconsin, and I got to set this up because it explains the kind of person that he is. I was in a meeting. Many of you know I worked at Wisconsin, and he heard me talking about my radio show and said, hey, I'll come on. And we held our meeting, and then at the end he was like, call my assistant, I'll come on. And I was kind of shocked and was like, he's not going to really come on. And he came on, and it was just a great experience and spoke to me with what kind of person he is. And so in our 5th year, we want to really bring him back, given that he's about to go into his 4th year at Arkansas, and really want to check in with him and consider him, you know, even when I talk to the other guys,
on the show, we always talk about the experience of when he was on the show. And so I want to welcome to the Real Sports Guys, Coach Brett Bielema, head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. How you doing, Coach?
I'm doing good, Devon. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. It's been you're entering your fourth year here. And so I want to start out with, you know, you just reflecting a little bit on those first 3 years and what you've learned since making the transition there, and what are some of the things that you're trying to do? Do you feel like you have the program where you want it in your image and how you envision it? But, you know, how have these first 3 years been for you there?
You know, they've been first couple a little long, but that first year we went 3-9 and had a lot of adversity that we had to triumph through, and our kids have handled that moment. Next year we were able to get to 7 wins, get to a bowl game and win that, and play Texas and beat Texas in Texas in Houston Stadium. Was a really, really big turning point in our program. I think it gave our kids the feeling that, hey, we can win anywhere, we can beat people. We won 2 games down the stretch here. Actually, the first time in NCAA history where an unranked team had 2 back-to-back shutouts against 2 ranked teams. We beat LSU and Ole Miss back-to-back. Then going into our third year, a lot of high expectations. Unfortunately, had a little bit of a bump in the road early on, but battled back, won 6 of our last 7, finished with another bowl victory against Kansas State, a national program that I think, again, kind of gave our guys a little feather in their cap, had a very good recruiting class, and now we'll head into our fourth season, and I think probably as deep a roster as I've ever had, and very excited about the opportunity.
What I've really appreciated about knowing you is, you know, you've been fortunate enough to be to lead kind of 2 top-level programs, but I've always been kind of fascinated by your approach to recruiting because, you know, that's the lifeline. And I love your quote. When I saw it, I laughed because, you know, I've worked with you in that perspective and kind of have a sense of how you think. But, you know, you said, you know, you're never going to see me sitting here with a 5-star athlete waiting for a hat to turn over. And because it has a lot to do with how you recruit. Can you talk a little bit about your recruiting philosophy and how you like to build your program?
Well, it is. I think we had to find a kid that fits Arkansas. One of the main attractions when I came here to Arkansas, I thought there was a lot of similarities between here and Wisconsin. You know, as far as college football, Wisconsin was the only D1 program in the state and kind of was the cat's meow of the entire state. Of course, you had the Packers and you know, the Bucks and the Brewers, yeah, and all that jazz. But coming here to Arkansas, there was Arkansas State, who was a good program, but no one really holds them in the same level as us. And there are no other pro teams. There's no pro baseball, basketball, or anything like that. It's just a unique environment to work in. And, you know, of course, we'll love 4 or 5-star kids if we get our hands on them. Last year we signed one kid, Sosa Aguim, who already came in. He started in January, is going to be one of our premier players. But for the most part, we do it a lot with 2-star, 3-star, 4-star guys that kind of fit our mode. You know, you got to love the game of football to play here. You can't just wake up and say, hey, I want to go play at Arkansas. You got to be trained in a way to make it last. We're a development program, so you got to enjoy the grind. At some point, we're going to probably grind it a little bit harder than other people, and you have to embrace that. That's got to be part of our DNA, and there's a lot that goes into it, but the end result is a lot of fun.
And one of the things also, I mean, I saw a tweet you sent out about the team GPA. You know, people talk a lot about, you know, coaches giving lip service, you know, but I've had a chance to work with you. You know, you do embrace the academics, and saw you tweet that out. And, you know, how do you build that expectation around, like, this is about being a student athlete when they come to Arkansas?
Well, it is. I think, you know, it's our obligation. I think we grab a young man at the age of 18, and he comes to school, and for the first time he's been around his support factors, you know, the parents or the family or the coaches that have made him who he was. And now you got to make sure that he does that next step, which is get that degree, that piece of paper that will carry him for the next 40 years, 50 years of his life. So that's a very, very important thing to me. And we took a GPA that was around a 2.2 when I got here. We're barely under a 3.0. We just finished with the highest semester GPA in school history. We led the SEC. In the last 3 years, I've had 100 players become academic All-SEC, and that leads the whole entire conference over those 3-year window. Last year, we led it all with, I believe, 40, and the next highest number was Alabama with 32. So we're setting a 10 there, and I do believe that smart players off the field lead to smart players on the field, and for that reason, I took a lot of my model that we had at Wisconsin and carried it to here. Just didn't want, another quote that I always loved in recruiting is you recruit your own problems, and if these guys are complaining about these kids that they've recruited and they cause all these issues or all these problems, well, you're the one that gave them a chance, so you got to be able to kind of burn it out of both ends.
So you said this is the best team. You lost a lot of talent with the graduation or people going on to the NFL draft. You had Brandon Allen I think he had like 30 touchdowns or something like that. Alex Collins, who great running back. You had Henry. I think then he won the Mackey Award.
Yep.
So you lost some talent. When you look at this is the building. This is where you build championships. You know, coming out, you were like I think the last program in the SEC to do a spring game. What did you learn? And what do you want to have in place? What do you need to improve on by the time you get to that opening game?
Well, I think we just got to keep our standard mode of operation. We're a program that develops players. We never really want to become satisfied with yesterday's results. And I challenge our players all the time, whether they're here on campus, whether they're at home, whether it's our coaches that are on the road recruiting or here at home developing our players. We're trying to make ourselves – it's a process. We try to get better every day. And if we can continue to work this process, good things will eventually come. And I tell our coaches all the time, just keep the pace, keep the faith, keep the pace, and just keep grinding because it'll get there. Where we are right now compared to when I first got here, it's like night and day. And that's what you need to do to turn one of these programs. And we're closer now than we've ever been, but we're still a long ways away. So it's a lot of fun to kind of work through it all.
Well, you definitely moved from the Big Ten to the SEC recruitment. But, one of the things you haven't been shy to talk about things that you think need to change in the game. I was trying to figure out what the chatter was around this kind of satellite camping stuff. I was trying to get my head around it. What's the big issue around that? I was just at Michigan's spring game trying to look at what they had. But I was trying to – what's the issue around that?
Well, it started actually about 4 or 5 years ago. When I first came into the league here to the SEC, there were teams that were coming from Oklahoma that were in the Big 12, Oklahoma State and Oklahoma, and they'd come down to Texas and put on these satellite camps. And even though they weren't hosting them, they would partner with another school, and they would be able to have their coaches present and get a chance to work with them. And I'm a huge recruiting tool. Obviously, you can't recruit, but you can work with them, and you can visit with them, and to spread your brand in a foreign state. Before, you weren't able to leave the state as a high school camp. You couldn't do – there were certain rules within a mile radius of your campus and state borders. And then as the years went on, people began to catch on. And actually, when the SEC had a couple coaches defect to the Big Ten, that's when they brought them to the Big Ten. And then obviously Michigan did it last year, which drew everybody's attention. So it kind of been in the hopper. And then they passed a rule this year that opened up the floodgates. And, I mean, they've got the wild, wild west going on right now. They just came out with a 6-page letter yesterday telling us what we can and can't do. I mean, they're trying to cover their tracks. It's really kind of I think that it'll get blown up so bad this year that it'll be something that'll probably be eliminated before the season next year.
I mean, if you were thinking about one or two things you'd say, because I know you think about this, that would improve the college game, what are the things that you would like to see that would improve the college game? I mean, it's a great game, a great product, what are those things that you think would improve it?
I think from a recruiting standpoint, to make it a little bit more even keel for everybody in the country, there's certain schools that after 50 years of tradition have got to build an advantage. But if you can maybe level the playing field by allowing to send parents, which they're going to actually pass a rule now that parents can come on official visits and have a chance to see the school up close. They've never been able to do that. The rules that they have now just about how much you can feed the kids and the ability that you have to, post-train them when they get done with their workouts is a huge advantage. I think one that really jumps out to me is there's such a discrepancy in sometimes in the pace of play and how it's judged within leagues to have a little more uniformed, consistent pace of play be the standard for the entire country might be a good thing as well.
Okay. So I got a couple questions here because I know you got a lot going on. You want to run a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about maybe one or two players that you're really excited about? You want to see what they do for you next year. You know, I know you have with Frank Ragnow is a Remington Award. So obviously that, you know, having a center, having somebody up the middle who's that good is really good. But beyond Frank, who are some other people that you're really excited about to see what they can do for you?
Well, excited with Frank just because we always have old linemen up for awards, and he's from Minnesota. We really beat out on everybody in the country. It really got down to us and Florida State towards the end. Great player. Also, my starting tailback, it'll be a battle between Cody Walker and Raleigh Williams, two very talented running backs. Raleigh came in last year, unfortunately broke his neck in the Auburn game, but should be a 1,000-yard rusher and a very, very, very good football player that can come in and change the game in a heartbeat. I think we have a group of 4 to 5 wide receivers. I've never had this luxury, who are among the best I've ever had. We had Keon Hatcher, who's a senior, and then also a senior in Dominic Reed, who's been timed in the sub 4.240 range. So some guys that can really play. On defense, we got 9 of 11 back. We have a starting middle linebacker who started since his freshman year, who is got close to a 3.7. He's a pre-med. Just a phenomenal football player, but also a person. So very excited about this group overall. And you know, the best part about them is, you know, they don't have any idea how good they can become. They're just, you know, trying to work every day and scratching the surface to where they want to go.
And finally, because he's kind of made some news here recently, and when we interviewed you towards the beginning, we launched our podcast. You know, you had some really strong and really sound words to say about Russell Wilson, and he just did the commencement here at Wisconsin this year. But it appears that people challenge his persona, whether or not he's genuine. And I know when you spent a lot of time with him and really pay attention to – I know you really try to push on that character thing. Why is he, someone like him, misunderstood? I know you spent a little, you know, you were there, you worked with him. Why is he sometimes misunderstood as a person?
Well, I think a little bit because he's almost too good to be true. I mean, he truly is an incredible human being that is gifted in many ways beyond football. You know, my wife Googled up that commencement speech, and I listened to it on Sunday night, and just, you know, the message that he gave those young people was priceless about the ability, you know, to battle back when people say no. And the answer is you got to find within yourself, and sometimes you just got to succumb and move on. But I thought his message was unbelievably clear and loud and great to the young people that were there in attendance, as well as the old people. And the other part, I think, is, you know, because people in this world naturally want to hate. I mean, Russell's had so much success. Every time someone has success, you know, 80% of the people want to see it fail, you know, and it's just the way people work today. I constantly guard our players against it. It's just natural, and then, you know, certain parts of the country, it's a little bit more than others. I always found it entertaining, as much success as we had at Wisconsin. There was a lot of people that want to talk about what we didn't do. We didn't win a Rose Bowl. We didn't, you know, well, we also went to 3 straight Rose Bowls that had never been done since the a program, I believe, in the 70s. You know, so we did something nobody else had done in a long, long time. And it's just unfortunate that people in today's world try to focus on the negatives rather than the positives. I think life would be a lot better if you focus on those, but everybody doesn't want to take my advice. So, you know, I also believe the world would be a better place if everybody wore flip-flops. I don't think we're going to get everybody to buy in yet, but you got to have your own way of looking at things, you know?
Yeah, I understand. Well, Coach, I want to say this, man. I've tried to, you know, I've always tried to secure interviews with different folks, and there are certain folks who won't do, they only do interviews with ESPN or other ways, other big-time podcasts and networks, but you've always kept it real with us. You know, we reach out to you. You've been there. And we appreciate it. You know, we're here 5 years later, and having you come back on the air with us during a time when you're trying to get things done. So we definitely appreciate having you on the air, and look forward to, you know, reconnecting in the future, and wishing you well in your season next year.
Thank you, Devon. I appreciate it very much, and you guys keep it real.
All right, Real Sports Guys. That's with Coach Brett Bielema here on the Real Sports Guys podcast. You know, a 5-year reunion show, getting back and getting some of our highlights, and he was definitely a highlight. We appreciate having him with us.
All right, welcome back to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Man, Devon, that was great work, man. That was great work. And, again, shout-out to Coach Bielema for joining us again and helping us kind of celebrate this fifth-year anniversary of the start of the show. Man, you guys touched on a lot of topics. One that I was really interested in hearing him talk about was the whole situation with the satellite camps. And I thought that the NCAA, I mean, they might have popped the ACL, MCL, and the UCL as quickly as that knee jerked when they reacted and trying to ban the satellite camps, which I thought was a genius idea and was actually something that benefited kids. Yeah, programs kind of were able to kind of go outside of their area and get – but that's I don't think there's a problem with that. Like, if you find a kid who may have fallen through the cracks before, it's about creating those opportunities. And I felt like the satellite camps were doing that. What were your thoughts on Coach Bielema's perspective on the satellite camps?
Yeah, I mean, I think, the SEC has been pretty loud about it, you know, and I wanted to definitely get his perspective on it. And, you know, what I could tell in his answer, and we kind of talked a little bit off air at some point, but, you know, the frustration with not being able to make a decision. And, you know, he talked about the 6-page letters that he got from him. And so, you know, I could tell it's a frustration with him, and I think that's happening with a lot of other coaches that, you know, they were quick to react to this, but, you know, they take, you know, 3 years to make a decision on another thing. And so this inconsistency they have, you know, when just kind of reacting to some issues raised. And like I say with you, I mean, you know, one of the things you notice with him is, like, you know, anything that can make it easier on the parents, the kids, you know, anytime you can create an opportunity where kids don't have to travel that far to be seen and you don't have to put any more economic pressure on them, you know, it's something that I think is good. And you can sense that with him is that he gets, you know, he feels like the NCAA doesn't have the attention on the right things, but they want to be blocking things that could be a benefit to directly to the athletes. So, yeah, I mean, I think his answer was right on, and probably, you know, other than someone like Saban, you know, you know, probably what most coaches probably feel about this issue.
Yeah, Saban's always a little bit, I mean, I don't know, sometimes I feel like Saban, like, he got his way and he wants to, like, switch it up so that his way is the only way. You know, like, he didn't want, he tried to, like, you know, he was advocating for, you know, I guess slowing down the game and not letting teams speed it up because that wasn't to his advantage. You know, satellite camp.
And Brett was on that pace of play thing as well. I mean, it was him and Saban on that one. I didn't push him as much on that point, but he was also on that pace of play. So that was like one of the few things that he and Saban probably felt like they were on the same issue on. But I didn't push him as much on the pace of play conversation because I didn't have much time with him. But he did raise the issue. If you heard the interview, he said something about pace of play. So he's the one person that's on the Saban side. And I was kind of surprised because I think with the way he wants to play, I don't think it would be that much harder. I think he could probably adjust probably more than Saban, but he's been on that side.
Yeah, I think on the field, given where he's at, it'll be difficult to replicate the style of play that he had at Wisconsin just because if you're going to play that way, you're playing right into a team like Alabama or LSU's hands, and they're usually going to have better athletes. And a stronger, they're going to be stronger up front usually. I think it's tougher in SEC to play that Wisconsin style of football, that smash mouth brand of football, because the athletes are a little bit different. PhD, anything stood out to you? What were your thoughts on Brett? And again, thanks to Coach Bielema for blessing RSG with another great interview. What were your thoughts on the interview, PhD?
I tell you what, Coach seemed like he's trying to get a nice stable down there. He said he got a cat that's been timed in the 4-2 range. I was waiting for him to say, yeah, 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 click, clack. Yeah, he can go, click, clack.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it was a great interview. Throughout the interview, I was just reflecting where we've been over the past 5 years, and you're right, he was one of our, first guests to come onto the show, and it was just really interesting to hear the things that you all have already talked about in terms of the satellite camps, but also kind of a reminder of what he accomplished at Wisconsin and also some of the feats that he's accomplished at Arkansas. So, I wish him the best, and he seems like he's that's a really tough place to be successful. But he hit the nail on the head saying that, Arkansas, they don't have any major pro teams there. It's just Razorback country. So, hopefully if he can win the state and, win occasionally in the region down there, to me it was a shame that he lost, he left Wisconsin because, when he was there, I always put him at one of the top five coaches in the country, just in terms of what Wisconsin was accomplishing, given that they weren't, one of the, original core teams in the Big Ten. You looked at Michigan and Ohio State, and when they had hiccups, Wisconsin was right there. He took advantage of that. So, I do have faith that he could do the same thing or even better things in Arkansas. And so, I'm looking forward to continue to grow the program down there.
All right. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio. Make sure you go to iTunes and subscribe to the Real Sports Guys podcast. We'll be right back after this quick message.
Hi, this is Brett Bielema, the head coach of the University of Arkansas Razorbacks, and you're keeping it real with the Real Sports Guys. Whoopig.
All right, and we are back. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, RSG Renegade Radio, the People's Podcast. We are about to hit you off again. Thanks to Coach Bielema and D. Wills, Suge Knight, for hooking that up, getting that set up, man. You always making major moves. I'm doing the little Riley Curry thing. I don't know if y'all saw Riley Curry, where she did the little, I'm watching you to the reporters. That kid, man. I'm telling you, man. Riley Curry be killing you, man. She be killing.
Oh, she killing me. But you know, we both gotta get love to our guy Phil, because he kind of like he that Dr. Dre, and he keep you motivated on it. So I always like to give him a shout out, because when I'm reaching out and doing these things, I'm always thinking about him, because he's put on quite a production on stuff. So I have to always give it to my boy, because he keeps me motivated.
Absolutely. It's the illustrious three-man booth, right? It's all three of us
putting
it down, making it happen, as always. So we are going to hit you with a classic segment. The Funky Editorial is back for this five-year edition of the Real Sports Guys. Let's go ahead and get into it, fellas. We know how we love this drop.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say.
Yes.
Shall we say it, y'all?
Yes.
Melvin,
right.
Jimmy,
yes.
Coleman,
yes.
Ryan,
yes.
Sit!
Yes.
Everybody want to get funky one more time.
Yes, sir. This edition of the Funky Editorial, the Real Sports Guys, we are going to talk about LeBron James. Recently just signed a $1 billion contract with Nike, a lifetime deal. A couple of questions I got for the fellas. We're going to toss around a few questions around this particular topic and get the Real Sports Guys' opinion on this particular situation. Now, LeBron signs his $1 billion contract with Nike, lifetime deal. First question I got, I want to throw this out to PAC. You're a LeBron fan. What does this say about LeBron corporation?
I'm sorry, you said what does it say about LeBron's what?
His corporation and LeBron, the entity, the business entity that is LeBron James Inc. Where what does this say about where he's at as a as a business corporation in himself?
It says that he's trailblazing, man. If you take a step back, I would say that the most successful athlete, in terms of becoming a successful businessman and really, you know, turned himself into a brand, was probably Jordan. Magic's all, you know, clearly done a great job, and there's others, but you look at what Jordan has done, what his net worth is, going on to buy a team. Either Jordan was doing this on a low back when he was playing, or a lot of these things started to emerge after he had finished in terms of his Jordan brand deal. And so now with LeBron, we're starting to see him do this, you know, towards the prime or the back end of his career when he's still very relevant in terms of his playing career. So I think in a lot of ways LeBron has been a trailblazer, man, with his 1+1 deal each year. You know, those 2-year deals where he's really holding the team accountable. He's done a lot of different things. You know, when he came out of high school, he had a $90 million deal with Nike. And now we see this deal that has the potential of getting to be around $1 billion or over $1 billion. That relatively looks like chump change, the deal he had coming out of high school. So I think everything he's done, especially with coming back to Cleveland, because I don't think he gets this deal if he didn't come back to Cleveland. When he came back to Cleveland, the people that were hurt the most, Clevelanders, it's pretty much, I mean, most people have forgotten that in terms of people within the Ohio-Cleveland region. I think people nationally and globally still, you know, may hold some contention towards him, but for the most part, the people in Cleveland have looked past that because he kind of came back. And so I think that also helped him get this deal. So he's just done a lot of different moves along the ways, along the way, even some missteps. But he's figured out how to kind of redo things in a better way. So, I mean, the sky is the limit with this dude. And if he is able to lead this Cleveland Cav team to a championship, $1 billion will be it seems odd to say this, but I think it'll be a bargain for Nike.
Wow. Okay. And I can't really argue with that perspective. I think, you know, the $1 billion number, we're talking about over his lifetime, you know, they're going to – I always kind of look at it like this. If somebody's going to give you that, they're going to get that plus some in return. Or if they wouldn't give it to you.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, right. People always say, well, this guy can't be worth that much money. Well, if they're making that times 10 off of him, then yeah, that's why they're giving it to him, because he is worth
right.
that much, because they're going to make that plus some off of him. So, you know, I think you're pretty accurate.
Jordan is still making, you know, 9 digits. You know, he's making over $100 million a year still. He's been out the game, you know, for the better part or 10-plus years now. And so in some ways you look at, hey, we're getting LeBron. He's only 31 right now, and we're getting a lifetime deal. I mean, it is kind of at a bargain when you calculate what tomorrow's dollars are going to be.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, Jordan, he ain't been in the game for a minute, but that meme of Jordan crying is everywhere.
Yeah.
Who did somebody mess up, man? Here they come with Jordan crying meme. It's like, come on, get tired out. Just let that one die for a little bit. Let it, like, let it go sit in the corner for a second and just let it marinate for a little bit. We don't have to use it every single time somebody fails at something. D. Wills, I want to pull you into this conversation. How can LeBron leverage this for to impact the game on the court? You know, obviously he won't be hurting in this financially. He's kind of already done the 1+1 deal. Do you think he kind of starts to take a Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki kind of approach? Like, I'm good financially. I don't necessarily need to be the highest paid player on my team. I want to start to win some champions. I want to start to really rack up some championships. How do you think he could possibly leverage? Do you think he might leverage it that way?
I think he might, but I think he might make Gilbert go one more year to make sure he's locked into the strategy. You know, I think that's one of the reasons why he was able to do it. And he'll leverage it more or less for his deal. He'll do what he did for Tristan. He'll make sure these key players get the money they're supposed to get. So, yeah, I think he'll do that.
Yeah.
But I think he'll still take a little bit more money to keep Dan Gilbert, you know, in and honest in the pace, right? And so I think that'll happen. But I think you'll see, as it is for today's market, because that money's going to go up, right? The money's going up over the next couple of years. So there's going to be a lot of room for people to play. And I think he wants to make sure that Dan spends that money wisely. So, I mean, when you think about his first decision to get rid of the agents and have his boys working with him on his marketing and then sending people to school, doing that stuff, when he did it, people thought he was crazy. But, I mean, wise beyond his years, he's laying this blueprint out, man. And I think it's going to have an even bigger impact on some of the work he wants to do in the Akron area with the Akron Promise, some of the stuff he wants to leverage to make for social change. I mean, I think that's where you're going to really – he understands by being in that kind of space, it allows for him to influence, whether it's politics, other things, in a way that he could do over his lifetime. And I think he's always been that way. I think Phil's talked about the impact of LeBron, and we're going to begin to understand him the farther away we get. I mean, I don't think we're going to really understand what this young man knew at such a young age for another 15 years, the way he's setting the game up. I mean, he's setting the game up in different industries in ways that are, you know, Mike has been very successful, but Mike didn't move the pieces. I feel like Mike had really good people around him, and he rolled with the plan. I feel like LeBron is moving the pieces on the chessboard, which is different.
Yeah, and that's very different. And I think, you know, I think it's one of those situations, and I don't want to step in the field area of being too much of a LeBron fan. And I got something for both
That's
of you
fire.
Guys. From here on out on this radio show, when Phil starts talking about LeBron or D. Wills, when you start talking about Draymond, I'm gonna throw this on.
You on your production, man. You on your A game.
Yeah, both. Anytime y'all start talking about Draymond, I'm trying to throw him stand. Look at you with that Eminem stand. Okay.
So,
okay.
So we go. Will you throw it on when you start talking about Tracy McGrady?
I ain't finna talk about Tracy.
You talking about Tracy McGrady, Hall of Famer, greatest of all time.
Every time
we have to throw it on when you start talking about Greg Oden.
Greg Oden, reminisce.
Yeah, I got
jokes.
Reminisce
over you.
I got jokes, and I run the board. So
right.
So the last thing I want to say is that, you know, Under Armour has Steph, they have Cam Newton, they have Bryce Harper, which are kind of the young faces, not necessarily young faces, but some high-profile guys who are at the top of their leagues very high profile, kind of household names. And Nike still has a 90% share in the athletic apparel shoe market as far as the triumvirate of Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour. Do you think Nike had to do this in order to maintain that 90% share as Under Armour continues to grow? We're seeing a lot of universities and colleges switch over from Adidas to Under Armour. The NBA is switching from Adidas to Nike as their apparel provider. The NFL is a Nike league. So Under Armour is kind of Marlowe Stansfield right now, trying to move in on Barksdale and Bell on the B&B game. And Adidas is kind of Prop Joe right now. Well, they on the east side. And they kind of see how this whole west side, west Baltimore thing play out. But yeah, I think they're going to wind up getting stuck.
Proposition Joe, yeah. Man, that might be the sweetest name of all time. This cat said he was Proposition Joe because he just always had a proposition at hand.
Right. And that was the beauty of The Wire, man. Like, you know, and he would approach you that way. He'd be like, brother, I got a proposition for you. Now the real question is, when did Prop Joe become Prop Joe? You know what I'm saying? Was like he's like
right.
10 and like rolling up on people in the cafeteria like, I got a proposition for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, because some people are like that for when they're young. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he was a real cat, would he have been Proposition Joe at 11? Or did he become Proposition Joe at some? Because I don't think that's something you become in your team. I think you're just like that.
No. I agree.
Yeah. I think he was trying to avoid getting beat up. You know, and that was the way he redirected people's attention.
Hey. Survival of the fittest, man. Survival of the fittest. That is what it's always about, man. That is what always about. So, you know, but what are your thoughts on that? The idea that Nike might have had to have made this deal in order to kind of secure their future as a brand in a marketplace that's getting a little bit more competitive. What are your thoughts on that idea, PhD?
That's an interesting position because, you know, if you just kind of play this out, how, you know, like, get a feel of how it likely played out, Nike couldn't lose LeBron. They couldn't lose LeBron. He is their thoroughbred in their stable right now. That's my second stable reference for the night, and my last. But, you know, and maybe it was Under Armour. I wouldn't put it past LeBron. I think it's brilliant of, hey, Nike, you got to make a move. You got to make a move. This is what it's going to take. If not, I'm going to explore my other options, or I already have an offer in hand. And so, you know, I mean, this cat just secured a billion-dollar deal. And, yeah, so from Nike, they just couldn't lose him. I think losing LeBron in 2016 would be as close as the closest comparison would be to them losing Jordan back in Jordan's heyday in the mid-90s, in the late 90s.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be as critical, but I think it's probably the closest in terms of them losing one person and how that could shift. I mean, if LeBron left Nike, man, that would be a 30 for 30, just like him leaving Cleveland.
Yeah. Because wherever he goes, immediately
Phil Knight gonna write a letter.
Phil
Knight gonna write a letter.
Post
it.
Sidebar.
Call him a traitor.
Cleveland. Watch it, listeners. Watch it. It was. It was deep. I mean, there were a few times, and I'm not even from Cleveland. I've been here for the better part of more of a decade. But, I mean, like, there was just some things that hit home for me, especially the LeBron piece, because I lived that. But the Cleveland Browns and the Indians. I mean, man, Cleveland fans have to be the most cynical, pessimistic fans you will ever run into, and that's saying a lot if you know the definition of the word of a fan, a fanatic. But you watch that 30 for 30 and you get it. At least I did. Like, I got it. I mean, it's well-founded. And, yeah, I mean, with the Cavs going down or tying the series at 2-2, you just – part of it's like, wait a minute. What's going on?
Man, he on the board tonight. He on the board like Ken Capri. He on the board like Ken Capri tonight, boy.
Right, you know, I mean, I sent Marcus up with a beautiful transition, and he's just here, you know, giving me this music in the background. I hear, you know. I didn't pick it up, so I just felt a little quiet. I said, oh, man, you got it.
He getting you like his Love Jones, like. Like, you know, love and basketball. He getting emotional. Oh,
hey, I'm here all night, man. I'm here all night. We going to transition, though. Because you did set me up nice. So we going to transition. You listen to the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, the People's Podcast. We going to get into the five on the black hand side. This edition of the five on the black hand side, we will be focusing on the NBA playoffs. So let's go ahead and jump right in, fellas.
Five on the black hand side.
All right, five on the black hand side. The Real Sports Guys have five questions. Each of us will take a turn kind of answering the question. First up in the five on the black hand side, and first I got to get us queued up with some sounds. For the five on the black hand side. All right, now we're properly ready. Five on the black hand side. Yeah, we got that lounge music going. You got to stretch out to this, fellas. Yeah. Yes, sir. You know I had to get some outcasts in there for you guys tonight, man. I had to get some outcasts on. Five on the black hand side. Number one, Kyle Lowry leaving the bench. Good move or bad move? Now, if you had to ask me this Monday morning, Sunday, I'd have said bad move. Tying it up 2-2, I really don't care. Take all the press you want, man. Compress all you need. But what was your initial thought? Like, my initial thought was, yeah, that's not a good look. What are you decompressing from? It's a basketball game, man, and you're a professional player. What is going on right now? So I was a little kind of skeptical at first, but again, winning cures all ills and really is ultimately the only thing that matters in the end. As a professional, what were your initial thoughts on the whole Kyle Lowry needing to go back to the locker room to decompress PhD?
Well, you know, we were at the game, man, so I didn't really hear about this the next morning, you know, on Sports Talk Radio. And honestly, when I started to see the highlights, it's, you know, the first thing that ran across my mind is, like, this is a non-story. It really is. This is a case of having way too many cameras in the arena. This is something that we wouldn't even have captured 15 years ago. So I just really saw it as a non-issue. I mean, the guy was in foul trouble when this happened, so he was not going back into the game. And he did this with like a minute or two left in the second quarter, but he was on the bench for the rest of the half. I just saw it as a non-issue.
Okay. D. Wills, did you see it the same way, non-issue, or is this something to be worried about?
No, I mean, I see it as a non-issue, man. When you think about all the stuff that happens on the sidelines. Yeah, you know, you had Dennis Rodman laying on stuff and sleep. You got people who go back and ride on a bike to stay loose. There's a lot that happens on the bench that we don't pay attention to. And so, you know, if he's going to go and take a break and come back, I didn't have a big deal with it. I had more of a big deal with him asking Tyronn Lue if they could sit down and watch Game 1 film together. That's why I think he's crazy. But other than that, leaving the bench. I mean, a lot of stuff happens on the bench.
Okay. Okay. All right. So, yeah, you guys didn't have any – again, at first I was kind of like, eh. But then after a while I was like, whatever. It's not that big of a deal. So I'm with you guys. It's not that big of a deal. Is it the best look in the world? No. Is it as big of a deal as we made it out to be, the media, us being the media?
Probably not. Let's go on to number two and the five on the black hand side. Is Cleveland really the favorite? Because this is what we were hearing before. Now, again, things have changed. As PAZ said at the beginning of the show, it was all good just a week ago.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a week ago, Cleveland was viewed as the favorite. They had surpassed kind of Golden State as a team that everyone thought had the inside track to winning the championship. Do we still feel that way despite the two losses, or should we have never felt that way to begin with? D. Wills, what are your thoughts?
You know, as Phil said, I mean, we were at the game Thursday night, and I was telling Phil, I was like, man, they look good. I mean, just ball movement and everything else. I think what we wanted to see, though, is, you know, they had that streak going and had no adversity, and now they have an adversity. I still think they can be the favorite. You know, Toronto made some adjustments, but, you know, I think going back to Cleveland, you know, I think most people thought it was going to go six games anyway. You know, not really seven, but probably five or six. So, you know, I think they still could be the favorite. But I think we find about all the teams, especially the teams that we're talking about, like Golden State and OK City, they don't have as much room for error as we thought. You know, and we're finding that out in the playoffs. And I think if all of them are playing at their best, you know, I think watching Cleveland up in person, you know, they're not a team you want to mess with. I feel good about what they're bringing on the court when you see them play in person. So, you know, I think they have slipped down a little bit, but I think they're a strong favorite.
Okay. PAZ, what's your thoughts on Cleveland as the favorite?
No. There's a team in the West that won 73 games. And they're still alive. Until they are eliminated, Cleveland is not the favorite. However, when you have the best player in the world, LeBron James, you're always in it.
Put the music on.
It's already on.
Because you knew he was going to pivot. You knew he was going to pivot. That's a slight to the MVP conversation. Okay, let's sit back. Go. I'm going to sit back and let you do your thing now.
Well, I was done. I was getting in and out of my stuff quick.
When he said he had the best player in the world,
talking
boy.
About this box, number three, is Ty Lue the best coach in the Eastern Conference? You can go ahead, D-Will. I mean, PAZ, go ahead. While your music's still playing.
Yeah, I think when you have the best player in the conference, especially in basketball, I mean, I don't know if we can say this in most other sports, but when you have the best player, you already have you're already halfway around the track of being the best coach. He's not battle tested and blah 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 blah, but I mean, when you have a team, man. You know, like when you have LeBron, like you're halfway there. So I would say yes, but I think it's also an infraction, man, on like it's a statement on how weak the coaching game is compared to 10, 20, 30 years ago, when you just had streams of programs set up. You know, the NBA was almost as stable as the college basketball scene is now. Back then,
yep.
You know, I mean, now you got college coaches. They'll give you 5-6 years to build something. Typically, you know, that's how it was back in the NBA, man. Back in the '80s and you know, early '90s, where you had, you know, teams were okay having George Karl take them to the 4 or 5 seed. Like they were okay with that. You know, now it's, you know, we got to get rid of everybody. So
right, the Memphis Grizzlies syndrome, right?
That's right. That's right. And the Denver
they can't keep
know.
A coach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now look where they at.
Yeah.
All right. Question number four and five on the black hand side. Is Bismack Biyombo, is he really 23? I'm just saying. This came up on the screen the other day, man. This came up on the screen and I was like, man, that dude ain't no 23.
He looked my age. And you know, recently there was a story. I don't hate to pigeonhole people, but you know, I'm just saying. You know, Cap of Africa in Canada. You know, he was posing like he was 17 at the high school in Canada, playing on the varsity team, killing, getting recruited. They come to find out he was 29.
Right, I heard about that.
So I'm looking at Biombo like, come on now, 23? Really? You supposed to be some type of 23-year-old. I ain't never seen no 23-year-old doing all of that, man. So, yeah, I just wanted to throw that out into the space, man. I don't think Big Mac Biombo no 23. He gonna age like Mutombo did. Mutombo was legit, and he was like 29. Then the next year, he turned 30, and it was like he was 38. It was like, wait a minute, dude. You hit this wall a little too soon, brother. You supposed to have about 5 good years left. So, I'm just saying. I'm watching. I'm hitting Biombo with that Riley Curry right now. The two fingers to the forehead. I'm watching him. So, we finna get into this. Devon, your turn. Second best player on the Golden State Warriors.
Whew. Mr. Mark Mosley, the field goal kicker known as Draymond Green. It's obvious. Play your music for me. I might hit 16 bars over there. But I'm all about Dre. You know, he on the defensive end, the offensive end, he anchors them. He sets their tone. When he's not in it, you can tell. Klay Thompson is getting a pass, man. If he ain't scoring, he ain't really playing. You know, and Dre is doing if Dre ain't scoring, Dre is doing some other things. But sometimes Klay he goes to the witness protection program if he don't hit his first three shots. But Dre, I mean, he anchors the defense. He gives them an edge that other cats don't give. He helps run that offense. Makes it easy on everybody else. So, yeah, he's clearly my second best player on Golden State. Play the music.
His mama named him Klay. I'm going to call him Klay. Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's the second best player on Golden State Warriors.
His mama named him Klay. I'm going to call him Klay. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I had some fun earlier today, man. What can I say? I had a little time. Devon hit me with a text. He's like, man, the board is empty, man. We need you to get on the board. You got to put the board back together. So I did. Oh, man. So, THD, second best player on the Golden State Warriors. Who is it?
Oh, man. I used to know you. So, Devon, I'm just going to say it, man. I didn't see Draymond being Draymond. And you saw him grow into Draymond a lot sooner than I did. I gave you a lot of stuff, man. And I blatantly said you were wrong about Draymond. And I'm going to say right now, you weren't. I was wrong about Draymond. And I have reluctantly taken this position where I'm at now, and it's taken me one morning. I felt like the Dan Patrick show, the Mike and Mike show, like you had put them up to talking about this. Each of them just spontaneously start, like, ask the question, is Draymond Green a top 10 player in the league? And I said, wait a minute, is D. Wills, like, you know, like, is D. Wills part of this, man? Like, what is this? And I still didn't believe it. And so then, you know, I'm at work, man, and I'm talking, like, I'm at the water cooler, and somebody brings up, you know what, I think Draymond Green is a top 10 player in the NBA now. And like, I'm looking around the corner, man. I'm like, is D. Wills here somewhere? And this was during the stretch when, you know, I think – what put me over the – so to answer your question, yeah, I think Draymond Green is the second best player on the Warriors. But I think what really pushed him over the top for me, and I hope I'm not getting caught up in the moment, is what he did when Steph Curry was hurt for those few weeks at the end of the first round and during the second round. I mean, man, he was putting up major numbers, like almost a triple-double every night. He was creating stuff for other people. And honestly, he was doing what he normally does without Steph. And so I was of the ilk that I thought that a lot of what Draymond was doing was a result of the defense having to account for Steph and even Thompson. And there's probably some truth to that, but for him to be able to do what he did when Steph was hurt said a lot. And Thompson played well, too. He played, you know, like, in some ways I think Thompson's ceiling might be what we see him do with Steph, which is still, you know, he's a legitimate all-star, but Draymond gives you something different, man, that good teams need to become great.
Okay. All right. I guess I'm just standing over here by myself.
Draymond is really, really good. Draymond is really, really, really good. Here's a question I ask you guys, and I'm not expecting you to answer this in any kind of way. It's just a question that I'm throwing out there. What position would you say Draymond plays? Just for the sake of classifying, putting him in, as a position. I know he plays multiple spots, and he's a guy who can play anywhere, but what position would you put him at?
I would put him at a small forward.
Small forward, okay. Any wheels, what would you put him at?
Yeah, close.
Yeah, it's hard. My greatness is that it's hard to put him at a position. But
right, but I'm just saying just for the sake, what would you classify him at?
Probably small forward, power forward. I mean, I can't really give him one. I mean, if we were sitting there,
okay,
play
small forward, power forward. We can go both. Small forward, power forward. All right. Generic hypothetical. You got to pick a guy to start your team. Generic hypothetical, all right? And you got to pick a small forward or a power forward. I'll go through the names. When I hit somebody that you would take Draymond before, just say I take Dray. Just say I take Dray.
But you got to do that same
small
exercise
forward.
With Clay.
Small forward.
You got to
LeBron.
But you got to do that same exercise with Clay.
Okay, small forward, LeBron.
Yeah.
Okay, silence. Paul George, small forward.
I might take him over here, though.
Okay. All right, so you taking Dre. All right, Kawhi Leonard, small forward.
I might take him over here, too.
What?
He give you
okay.
more.
Come on.
He give you as much on defense.
Okay.
But he give you other.
Wow. You're losing credibility.
Hold it. Let me get it. How many triple-doubles does he have?
Divine, you gonna use that one stat? That one stat.
I'm just gonna tell you. You're the big.
You sound like
guy.
Analytics guy right
questions.
Now. You sound like analytics guy right
I'm
now.
I'm trying not to be that, but I'm gonna ask you how many triple doubles does he have?
What does that matter? Who's the better player?
It matters. He's doing all of it. He's doing all
Rondo
of it.
Rondo had a lot of triple doubles at one point.
Rondo had the intangibles to go with the triple doubles. He don't have that.
So you taking Draymond Green over Kawhi Leonard. Got
yeah.
it. Noted.
Yeah.
Noted. Kevin Durant.
Yeah, I'll tell you that.
Small forward. Kevin Durant.
I'm taking
small forward. Okay. All right. Let's move over. Let's slide over to power forward position. Anthony Davis.
I'll take him over, Anthony.
Wow. Let's go to commercial.
That'll be close depending on what I'm trying to do. I don't know what else I got. Anthony missing on the leadership thing, man.
I'm just gonna keep this running
close. I might take Anthony a little bit.
I'm just gonna keep staying running.
Marcus, at Death Row, do you think they ever got to the point where they had to turn off Suge Knight's mic?
Several times. I don't even think they wanted Suge on stage at the Source Awards.
I'm just saying,
I don't even think they want
you to credibility, man. Devon, you don't have credibility, man.
I ain't trying to all be in the studio. I'm reluctantly trying to be in the studio. I ain't trying to be all in the studio. All
so,
on the record.
So far, Marcus, he said he'd take Dre over Draymond. Kawhi Leonard, Anthony Davis. Who was the third questionable?
Paul George.
Yeah. Wow, Devon. Do we need to go to commercial? Like, do we need to do that? Like, would
right,
you appreciate
I
that?
I can take the.
Let
you
the
need
music
to be
play,
yeah.
baby.
Do you need let to be
yeah,
compressed?
Yeah,
I'll have back to back this up.
Yeah, let's go to commercial.
That's the other segment. That's the next segment. So when people, but that's
I,
what I'm
I
saying.
Might,
so
I
people,
might pull back on. I'm gonna pull back on the Anthony Davis one though, man. I'll pull back on that one. I like
people.
That.
And people get right. into when people get into the whole Draymond top 10 guy. When you start to think about it and tick off names, he's really good. He's really good, no doubt. He is really, really good. And he might be the second best player on Golden State. I'm not saying that he's not. I think that's a legit statement you can make. But when people go as far as to say Draymond is the top 10 dude, I'm like, I can name six or seven guys at his position that I probably would rather have over Draymond. Just at his positions or whatever you want to call it. You know, just kind of his general role. Like, he's good. He brings something different. But there are some guys who I take before Draymond if I'm starting a team. And that's again, like, if I'm going to build a team around a guy, I don't think I'm taking Dre first. Dre might be my second guy because he can go with a lot of guys.
But if you do
he
the same thing
be,
with
a
Clay
lot
Thomas,
of those other guys,
Thompson,
I might take
do,
first.
But you could do the same thing with Klay Thompson.
You really could because Klay's a two, right? Klay's a two. That's a little different position. That's just – I'm not even going to do that. That's why I didn't even want to do that one. And I'm not saying – but I'm also not saying Klay's a top 10 player. I'm also not saying Klay's a top 10 player. You know what I'm saying? That's where I get a little –
but
I get
think,
a little head
with
the Draymond love.
Where
with, is that like we got to pull
Dre,
back and not try to make
the
two more than
the reason, really
the
reason why – the reason why – you know why Dre is? If he was a boxer, you would say, God, this guy – a lot of these guys can fight better, but this guy wins. Like, he holds a title. Yeah, people could beat Norton, but he's beaten everybody. And so part of it is it's a combination of how he plays and intangible stuff that puts him over. Even all those guys is something that he got. You put on the court, you can say all that stuff, he go at them, and they don't come back all the time. He guarding them.
Well,
KD
come at him right now.
KD is. I gave you two. Like KD, I think we all sleeping on KD. I think we forgot how great he is.
Whoa! Who was sleeping on KD? That's
I'm
y'all.
Not saying you have.
Yeah,
I'm saying a lot of people.
I called
up on him.
I kind of called.
But you called the term. But I never said KD was playing bad. But I think if you look at it in a broader conversation, people act like KD went somewhere. And he always been great. He in that other space.
I mean, he's in that space with Steph and LeBron. You know, those are.
But even Steph. We're not talking about Steph. Both KD and LeBron try to do things on both ends. I don't think that Steph always do. I love Steph, but I think he does a lot on the. He does 80-90% on one end. On the other end.
Who LeBron guarding in this series? He ain't guarding DeRozan, so don't give me that LeBron's like. Don't give me that.
Hold
he
up,
ain't guarding
why
DeRozan.
LeBron had to guard DeRozan. What? He was guarding DeRozan. If LeBron had to, whoever LeBron
was, DeRozan was giving him the B out
Come
last
on
night.
Now.
DeRozan
oh
was giving him
goodness.
The business last night. Then.
Oh my goodness.
You ain't guarding DeRozan last night.
Oh
you might guard DeRozan
goodness.
Last night.
Oh
then
my
DeRozan,
goodness.
So then DeRozan gave him the business.
Oh my goodness!
And so, like, I don't get your point, Marcus. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying you can't say Steph is not a great defender when we just watched LeBron get done up by DeMar DeRozan.
Marcus, so
I think you're reaching, baby. I think you're reaching.
Yeah. I mean, so
I'm not
LeBron,
reaching. That happened last night. That didn't happen last night.
It did. It did. Like, I agree with that.
Some ain't no half.
DeRozan. I agree that DeRozan gave it to LeBron last night.
Say what?
I mean, I agree that DeRozan gave it to LeBron last night. But
okay.
DeRozan is also at a very thin position as shooting guard. He's probably a top five, you know, offensive shooting guard in the league. And, you know, kind of like in baseball, good pitching will always be good hitting. I think that good offense in the NBA will always be good defense. I mean, even historically, you hold Jordan to 25 points. 25 points. 25 points, you think you're doing well. So, you know, I think the thing that puts some shade on your argument, Marcus, is that historically and even over the course of this season, LeBron has been, you know, a near all-defensive team type of guy. He's been a top-five perimeter defender. You know, I think in previous years you could say he's a top one or two. I don't think he's there anymore, but he's still a top-five guy. And so I think throughout
right.
the course of, like, a body of work of a season, he's still doing it. And I do think Steph gets a slightly unfair rep in terms of his defense. I don't think he's as bad as some people like to say, but
it's
I still don't think
him.
You can say that he's above average.
It's because he likes it.
But still, like, I mean, I'll give you that Steph is an average defender, which in today's NBA is not, like, that's not a criticism. You know, some people
right.
want to say
that's
that you have
saying.
To hide him, he's below average. Like, I won't go that far, you know, but to bring that into the argument of saying that, hey, LeBron, like, yeah, he got sizzled up last night, but that doesn't happen on a regular basis.
Right, and what I'm saying though is that like to say, well, Steph doesn't try on that end is just as absurd as saying.
No,
LeBron,
I'm not giving him
a
James Harden. I'm not giving him a James Harden argument. I don't
okay,
think he's like
so
that.
Then, so then,
but
so,
I'm not thinking.
So
I'm
then
thinking,
he plays defense.
But
now what happens?
But
though,
when
is
you
that
look
Clay
at
is a really good defender. But Clay is a really good defender, and so Clay gets the assignment on the perimeter. And that is, but don't knock Steph because he's not as good a defender as Clay, who is a really,
right.
really good defender.
Yeah, it's kind of like Isaiah and Dumars. Dumars always got that assignment, but that does not mean that Isaiah was not a solid defender.
Yeah, but I would even put, I'm not even putting him closer to Isaiah's realm of defense.
That's because Isaiah.
Like, that's not even close.
Time, man.
No, don't get it crazy. Now, don't get it twisted.
You throw a shade when you need to. You know what I'm saying? Like,
but he's
not.
Improved tremendously in that space. If you watch him, he played.
Steph's not all. I'm not putting Steph on my all defensive team, but I'm not going to say he's not one of the top three best dudes in the world for the defense. That's just nah. I'm not buying that.
Yeah, and he's also not the best player in the NBA either.
I'll just let it ride out.
I think we already moved into that segment. We don't have facts to back it up.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and do this.
I think we already
moved
into that segment.
Let's go ahead and do this. This segment is a new segment. I don't have facts to back this up. Where each of us is just going to take a turn saying some stuff. We're just going to say some stuff. So let's go ahead and get into it. I'm going to have you start us off, T.A.D. Let me hit the drop first.
I don't have back to back this up.
LeBron James is still the best player in the NBA, and my facts to back it up is what happened last year in the finals. Did his team win? No. But there's no other player in this league that could have led Cleveland to win two games in the final and just dominate like he did from the conference finals on to the finals. The point I tried to make earlier with you guys, you know, a few weeks ago is we need to wait until this season's over before we take a step back and say, like the playoffs as well, before we take a step back and say, okay, who's the best player? Because last year, I think after the regular season, people were singing the same song of Steph Curry is the best player in the league. But then after the finals, I think most people, even Marcus, kind of said, yeah, after the finals, it was still LeBron. And so, like, my point is we need to get to the finals this year to see what's going to happen before we start talking about who's the best player in the NBA, because LeBron plays possum, man, throughout the regular season. He's about championships right now. So I believe that he plays at 70-80% for most of the season. You know, last year he took a few weeks off. He didn't do that this year, but he's still, you know, like, it's still kind of coast mode. Let's make sure we get a top seed or two. But, you know, and then come to playoffs, I'm going to put in work. So for me, I need to see the whole body of work of the entire season, playoffs included, before I say, okay, Steph's the best player, because Steph is going at 100 miles per hour during the season, and that's why he deserved the MVP. But to me, he's still not the best player. If I have a draft, 10 times out of 10, 100 times out of 100, I'm taking LeBron first. I may even take somebody else second ahead of Curry. I don't know for sure, but I might.
Okay. D. Will.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Billy Donovan has moved in to the top five coaching positions, at least in the West. A man that took a lot of criticism.
Oh,
but I think he has
the top five in the West?
In the West.
Come on, man.
I don't have facts to back this up. But
you don't need
can I finish
to
my
back
point?
That up.
Can I finish my point? Man, like, you know, he went on a diatribe about King James. We said, man, let's play a little music in the background, and I'm trying to say this. What I'm saying is, and actually I talked to a coach today about this, and that he had.
Wasn't me.
not wasn't you. I didn't test it. But I think one of the things that I noticed in his growth, and a lot of this is I think the adjustment he made in the playoffs. I think he was trying to figure out how the NBA game works. But if you look at the way in which he's massaged and worked rotations, the way in which he made adjustments, even in that San Antonio series, the things that he's been doing in the Golden State series, but you could begin to see him do some things that I've been yelling Scott Brooks should have been doing for a long time in terms of how you develop that second unit, his ability to stay with some lineups that most people wouldn't stay with, then make adjustments. He's had as much to do with them doing well this season, but hasn't really got the credit. I think people will start saying it next year, particularly if Durant stays and he's able to really work with them through another full offseason and go. But I just think he's done an amazing job, and he comes with a lot of credentials. I mean, I think people think he's just at Florida, but he's got some NBA experience. He came in and got it, but I think he's a smart coach, and I think a lot of reason why they had a lot of these playoff games is because he's not afraid to make some of the adjustments that I saw Scott Brooks wasn't making.
I always tell him.
So I ain't mad at you on that. Donovan, I think he has done a better job than Scott Brooks has. I think they're running better stuff. In my opinion, they're running better stuff. I feel like the stuff that they run is not KD out with the ball out top and Russ out with the ball out top. And it's evident when they get into that, they struggle. When they stay away from that and they stay running something like an offense or some sets, things are better. My first one.
I don't have facts to back this up.
The NFL will have moved into the number two spot as America's favorite sport behind the NBA in the next 10 to 15 years. The reason I say that is I looked at some demographics. The average age of an NFL fan is 47 to 50 years old.
Wow.
Average age NBA fan, around 35. So that's one piece of it. The next piece of it is that having a 10-year-old son, I'm around young parents a lot, parents of young kids a lot, and I'm hearing more and more overwhelmingly people are scared to have their young kids play football. I am hearing, like, I was not, I'm not on the, like, football is bad for kids bandwagon. Like, if you're going to play from 10 to 35, yeah, you're going to have some issues. If you're going to play all the way up through the NFL, if you wouldn't have 1% or 1% that gets to play in the NFL, you might wind up with some brand issues. But I know tons of people that play high school football and are fine. I know tons of people that play college football and are fine. I think if you play another 10 years, then yeah, you're probably going to do some damage. And that there's a high probability that could be possible. But that's not everybody's experience, so I don't know why I would bar my 10-year-old from, if he wants to, from doing that. But there are a lot of parents who see it different, man. And it's a real thing. Like, it is a real thing. At least where we at. At least where we at, it is a real thing, and I'm seeing it more and more. And I think when you don't play a sport, you don't have that passion for it. You don't have that enjoyment of it. You don't have that connection to it. And as less and less young people continue to play, and as some of the older guys kind of phase out, I think the NFL may be in a spot where it's number two within the next 10 to 15 years. And on top of that, it's always getting bad press. I mean, just always. I mean, now there's a story out about them possibly trying to maybe have tried to railroad some research around traumatic brain injury as it relates to football.
Yeah.
Just things like that that continually happen that I think are
yeah.
kind of turning people off slowly, very slowly, but it is happening where people are they're taking their money and they're looking to go elsewhere as far as their entertainment value. And there's also, I think, a segment of society just doesn't want to watch something that is kind of, in their eyes, a blood sport, where they know human beings are really putting themselves in very, very, very bad situations in regards to their long-term health. So that's from the ground. That's where I'm seeing that from the ground. Like, I'm skeptical on whether or not it's really the brain injury is really a thing, or is it a thing for people who play in the NFL? And it might be just a thing for people who play in the NFL, but that's probably not going to be my kid. You know what I mean? But there are other people who see it differently, and there are a lot of them, and it's a growing number. I mean, my son on his football team, they had a very good football team. They went undefeated in their little league last year, and about four of his teammates aren't coming back next year. And it's not because they didn't play. These are three of them are one of the best players. Parents are just worried about head injuries. Just straight up, they're worried about head injuries. And it's like, wow. And these kids are talented. These kids are really good football players. And when your sport starts to lose those really talented athletes and those really talented athletes go elsewhere, it becomes less fun to watch because the really talented athletes are doing something else. And that's why nobody really wants to watch soccer, because then our best athletes aren't playing soccer in the U.S. So, excuse me. This is the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio. We're about to get ready to close out another great podcast. We've had a good time tonight. We will leave you with this last word from D. Wills. You got about 90 seconds, bro. Do your thing.
Well, thank you, guys. Hey, this has been a great show, and Marcus, you've been on that music, man, doing what you do. You being the elite star that I know you are. You're a 5-star. There's no argument about that. You top two. You know, one of the things I opened the show with, talking about my uncle, we call him Big Old Oscar, loved to talk about sports, and this kind of reminded me of. You know, just kind of the importance of sharing in the experience. You know, in a day of analytics where people are so conscious about data, we forget about the storylines and the relationships and all the things that are built around sport. And, and doing his home going kind of just reminded me of the importance of that. And so, you know, I just want to say to, you know, all the folks out there who listen to us, you know, we're going to have fun, laugh. We're going to talk about analytics. But at the end of the day, we're going to keep it real about the stories and about the energy. So, from the RSG, baby.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
That'll do it for this edition of Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG Renegade Radio, the People's Podcast. We'll catch you again in 2 weeks. See you then. Peace.